This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, folks, to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart. Dave Bourne is on his way back from the fair, being out playing out in the rain. We have a great guest in the studio today. As much as I like talking with you to give you all the local ideas and initiatives and institutions and individuals of interest, today in the studio we have somebody I've been waiting a long time to get with an endless list of topics to talk about, which affects so many of us in the Mid-Valley. If you have kids, what she does affects your life. If you don't have kids, what she does affects our standard of living and our ability to have economic development in the area, a lot of societal issues, and of course, I'm talking about the school district, and we have with us the superintendent, Christy Perry. Welcome to the studio.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I had to make that as fast as possible because I want to get to what you have to say. Set up.
We have long list.
Education is so critical, for so many things. We were talking just before we got on the show about how it intersects with economic development, it intersects with crime, it intersects with culture, it intersects with politics, a whole bunch of things that you're going to have to deal with. So your job, I can't even imagine how many hats in the closet you have to do your job.
I don't have a big enough closet.
Yeah. So, and also, folks, if you don't have kids, let me just tell you, having a thriving, good school district in your region really affects so many things having to do with how much you can enjoy living here.
That is
right?
correct.
Even
that
if you don't correct. Have kids in the school, I mean, you're paying property taxes for the school, but having the kids learn and have opportunities and transitioned into a functional workforce reduces crime. It increases the number of employers that want to be here because there's an educated workforce. All of those things make for a holistic benefit to us. And I know the business community gets that. You can't just have business. You also have to have quality of life, and that includes a great school program. All right, can I start a little politics?
You can try.
So many things to talk about. Christy Perry with us, superintendent of Salem-Keizer Public Schools. I feel for you and all of the superintendents in the state, and actually in terms of setting a budget, especially when the legislature's in session, like this year, it would be so nice if we can get our two political parties to just decide we're going to set the school budget in February and we'll argue about everything else.
That would be awesome.
Right? So would you please explain to us how difficult it is? Because you're trying to set a budget for a school year that starts in September, and they might be jerking this thing around like a football into May or beyond, right?
Correct. So the first year of a biennium is always the most difficult for budgeting because the legislatures very rarely ever make a decision about the state school fund in time for our budget committee process. So in Salem-Keizer, we start budgeting for the next fiscal year as early as November of the year we're in.
Yeah.
And we do, you know, we get our roll-up costs, we look at our budget module, we look at expenditures, and we start building our budget for the next year that early. As it gets closer to the budget committee process, which happens at the end of April, and so if the legislature hasn't set a number in April, I present a number on a guess of the revenue.
Well, that's efficient as can be.
That is very efficient. This is going to be my 15th year as an Oregon superintendent, and it is normal that I don't have a number and I have to use my crystal ball. So I've gotten kind of good at my crystal ball, but I'm still very many years doing a crystal ball for what our revenue is going to be. And then it can change after that.
Yeah. Does our local contingent of legislators help at all? Do you get the inside ear and say, well, we think we're going to settle at this?
We have some good connections with the Oregon School Boards Association, the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators, who have lobbyists that help keep a pulse on what they think the number is going to be. So if you can get within a certain margin, in my mind, though, I always have, here's what I think the number is going to be, here's what I will do if we get more, and here's where I'll cut if we get less.
Because this affects not just you, of course, and the job you're doing, but how many people are working there? Because you can't extend job offers. Mm-hmm. So some people are, I know I have a lot of friends who are working in the schools, mm-hmm. and you can't extend a job offer if you don't know if that position's funded, right?
Correct.
So you can, how is that for retaining employees?
Yeah, I actually have had to make the decision that I'm going to extend job offers with the best information I have, even before the budget committee process and before I know what the legislature is going to decide, in part because just like every employer, we have an issue with a big enough pipeline. Mm-hmm. And so it's essential to me that I retain the highest quality employees for our kids. So I can't take a chance on not having the quality. And so I, Salem Kaiser, wants to be at the front of the line for hiring because we want to hire the best on behalf of our kids. So, so far, I've been able to have a good enough crystal ball to do that well. There are times like this year, I think a little late in the budget process, I added some counseling positions. I added 6 counseling positions. Counselors are a hard to fill position for us. Mm-hmm. And so I would have loved to have hired those 6 counselors in February. But again, I just wasn't confident enough in the number that I could add 6 more. So we ended up in that hiring process about middle to end of May, which was late for us. But,
And for them. So they're trying to make plans on whether or not they're going to have a paycheck.
Right? Exactly. Yep. And whether they're going to work for us or mm-hmm. whether they're going to work for another school district in Oregon. So we're in competition with the other 195 school districts in Oregon in a pipeline of not enough employees coming into the system.
So how is Salem-Kaiser, when it comes to that competitiveness and bringing in quality talent, how competitive are we in terms of the packages you can offer for compensation and the school workplace. Mm-hmm. How are we doing as far as being able to recruit and retain?
Yeah, we are, as far as retention, we're kind of below the industry average. So we're in a good place with retention, even though we still have turnover. We have developed a number of our own pipeline programs. So this year, for example, we have our first graduates from Western Oregon University, and I think we've picked up 2 or 3 of about 5 that were graduated in June that are bilingual, bicultural teachers because we knew that a bilingual teacher is important. So these are Salem-Kaiser School District graduates who we put into a bilingual scholars program at Western and who have now graduated. So we feel like it's our job and it needs to be our job to build the pipeline.
Yeah, build the pipeline.
So we're targeting our own students to go into education programs. We also have a number of programs that are for our classified employees. So we have a number of classified employees who will go on and get special education teaching degrees, bilingual teaching degrees, teaching degrees in general, because we know that these are people who have an aptitude for working and teaching kids. And so we're putting them into programs. And we actually fund about $300,000 a year out of our general fund budget that goes just to the development of licensed educators.
Wow. A lot of people in the industry talk about people coming out without the skills and they're not mm-hmm. trained up. And kind of the answer is, well, train them up.
Correct.
Even if it's expensive and, you know, you don't really have a choice about whether or not you have classroom, you know, people standing in the classroom. So,
We're creating our own workforce. It doesn't create enough. We still have mm-hmm. to rely on all the other ways, but it expands the pipelines for us. And you think about for our classified employees who are living in Salem, dedicated to our community, we are giving them a chance for a higher wage profession mm-hmm. as well. And we already know they're dedicated to this community, these kids, and aren't going to go other places.
That is good. Because as far as Oregon, this is kind of a broad question, but do people go, hey, you know what? I'm going to be a school teacher. I think I'll go work in Oregon. Mm-hmm. Is that the case? Are we getting people from out of state that think the conditions here are better? Or
we do get some people from out of state, but we mostly pull from our workforce is mostly in state. We do get a few people every year. When I go around to the job alike meetings, which was yesterday, I find out, I usually take coffee cards, and I find out who is the person that has come the farthest to work for us. Yesterday, it was Switzerland.
Wow.
So we do have a new, I think that was in our special education job alike meetings. We do have a new special education teacher from Switzerland.
Awesome. maybe speak some German as well. Mm-hmm. All right, we're talking to Christy Perry, the superintendent of Salem Kaiser Schools. We're going to have to take a break. We're going to try to fit in some conversation about the bond work that's going on, the money being spent. Are they running into the same problems as the cost overruns at the police facility and such as that? And also just generally more about the district and who is going to school in. And you might be surprised about some of the statistics. So stick with us. This is Brent DeHart for Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Color Tile of Salem.
Thank you, Hunter. Welcome back, everyone. This is Brent DeHart for Dave Bourne. In the studio with us is the superintendent of public schools here in Salem Kaiser, Christy Perry. Let's talk about who's in your schools. I mean, we hear a lot about the poverty in the schools and the challenges that you have for a lot of societal issues. And I understand we have a fair number of migrant families and even refugees. And we don't think of ourselves as a refugee, like location, target location, but they're here, right?
Correct. Yep.
Tell us a little about that.
So first of all, we have a little over 42,000 students. So we're the second largest school district in Oregon, right behind Portland and right a little bit more than Beaverton. So we're the second largest. We are a majority-minority school district. So about 48 to 49% of our students are white, and the rest of our students are an ethnicity other than white.
Wow.
We have 17% of our kids that are kids learning English. In elementary school, that's about 24%, because as they travel through our schools, they exit from our program. So that number and percentage goes down in middle school and high school. So 24% of our elementary students, one in four, are students who are learning English and are in what is called an English learner program and identified as a student learning English. On any given day in our school district, we have 81 different languages spoken.
Wow. And how many of those different 81 different languages do you have a staff person to speak that language?
Maybe eight different languages. We do have a really high-functioning translations department that is very busy every day. And then in some cases, we have some languages that are much more difficult to find staff or translation department, and we work with a telephone service.
So 17% of your students are not English-speaking students. That's
correct.
Like about one in six, plus or minus.
Yep.
One out of every six, folks. Classroom has 30 people, right? Five of them. This is an average overall. Mm-hmm. It's different schools,
right.
But you can try to give the listener a visual picture that five out of those 30 kids in the classroom are people who didn't wake up speaking English.
Correct.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a task.
Well, and interesting fun fact about our students that when they're in our English language programs and they can exit before high school, they have a higher graduation rate than our students who are English-only students.
Really?
So our ability to get them in and support them, first of all, in their native language and build up those skills in their native language and then transition them to English, they actually are better equipped to learn to read and write in English.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. We'll have to have a whole hour on that.
Yes, we will.
And the whole immersion versus dual language process. Right. But we don't have time for that today.
Okay. We'll do another day. That'll be a whole hour of
okay.
time.
Sounds good. So migrant families, refugees, and they're coming in. You were talking before the hour, actually. Sometimes people just get dropped into your school district and they expect you guys to perform.
Right. We actually have become a refugee destination site. So because of Salem has more affordable housing than the Portland metro area, we have a number of organizations that live and work in this community that support refugee families. That started about 4 years ago for us. 1 year, we saw about 75 new refugee students come in within a 3 or 4 month period. And these are students who sometimes come with very little schooling. We sometimes will get 15 and 16 year olds that come into a high school that have no formal schooling and also don't teach don't know English. If you ever have a chance, a great school to visit is Waldo Middle School with our Newcomer Center. We have just amazing kids in that program who have come from very traumatic situations, and they will...
Like war-torn countries.
Yes, exactly. They'll find... I think one student was telling me the story of they had to flee in the middle of the night, leave everything behind because they were so worried they were going to be killed.
Oh, and that's charming.
So that they come to us. But here they come from all kinds of trauma. Uh-huh. And several of the kids in that class, English is like their fourth language to learn. So they're just these bright kids who are now tackling English, and we put them in a newcomer center to help build up their English skills in order to then integrate into English-only classrooms.
Geographically, are they coming from the Pacific Rim? Are they coming from Latin America? Are they coming from the Middle East? Are they coming from Central Africa? There's a little bit of all of it.
Yeah, I am not 100% sure the answer to that question. I haven't studied the demographics. I think a little bit of all of it, as mm-hmm. I'm thinking just about the kids in the Waldo Newcomer Center, because they each introduced themselves to me, and I think it was all over.
Wow, very interesting. All right, so what about the... We already established that there are more people who are non-white than are mm-hmm. white in our school yep. district. And I think a lot of people in Salem guys would be surprised to hear that. I tell the tale often. I heard a realtor speak in the early 90s, and Marion County was like 95% white in the early 90s. So it's very, very different change.
Yeah, but it's really in about the last 10 to 15 years, our demographics have really changed as a school district. We also have the most migrant families and migrant kids of any school district in the state. And we also, and partly because of our numbers, have the most numbers of kids living in poverty.
So in migrant, how do you define migrant?
Migrant are our families that might not live here the full year. So some families pack up, they'll come to work, and they'll be in school, and then they'll go home for several months out of the year mm-hmm. and then come back. So it's a special federal or state definition around that.
We're talking to Christy Perry, Superintendent of Salem Kaiser Public Schools. And how are you expected to do your job? I mean, I feel for you, and I just don't see how that should count against the teacher's performance. You know what I mean? Yep. It's like, well, I only had the person here maybe for 6 months out of nine, and the school district's performance. And of course, when you talk to the migrant families, I'm assuming it doesn't come with a whole lot of money and resources yeah. to help them, that yeah. Refugee or migrant families. Yeah. So how do you cope?
Well, we're really creative. It is the problem with systems that measure schools and absolutes. So a good example is the four-year cohort graduation rate. That has become a very important metric for us, as it should be a very important metric. But it does make you ask yourself the question, what about kids who come from other countries as refugees into high school and come as 15 and 16-year-olds with no formal schooling? Should we really be wanting those kids to be out the door at 18? Because mm-hmm. really, we want them to have completion. We want them to have a high school diploma, regardless of how much time it takes them to get it. For them to find high-wage jobs, high school diploma is a prerequisite for that many times. So yeah. We shouldn't always measure schools in absolutes. We should measure schools and how do they actually help the community have kids that are ready to work and earn in our community.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think, and I would think it'd be a better number to set when you're talking about 4 year graduation rates. The mm-hmm. people that's entered as freshmen, are they out yep. with a diploma in 4 years? Right, the
right.
cohort you call
yes.
it, right?
Yep.
And if they were the district's kids to begin with, and they're coming from a district school and they're in a program and they started all together, that's one thing. But when someone joins in out of the blue and doesn't have the background and maybe not the language skills mm-hmm. and maybe not the home life mm-hmm. and maybe not the traditional.
Yeah we have lots of kids with lots of challenges that make it hard at times to be learners. And our job is really to do everything we can to help them be in a space that they can be learners and give them the time and attention to help them learn.
Do you want to comment on the Safe and Welcoming Schools initiative from the school board?
Yeah, just this past week, the school board did adopt a Safe and Welcoming Schools resolution. Because we have about 38% of our students that are Hispanic, we know that our families are worried, regardless of their status. So we have kids that have come to the school board on a regular basis to tell us that they sit in their classrooms and they worry a lot about whether when they go home, their parents will be there or if they will be picked up by immigration officials. Some families worry that sending their kids to school puts them at risk for immigration activities. So we are very purposeful about taking a really clear stance that immigration officials don't come to our schools. They can't just pop into our schools. They have to have some sort of a lawful request. We don't just hand over student information. So we've not had any immigration activity in our schools, but we think it's really important to tell our families and kids that are have this worry that we are going to do everything we can to protect them while they're at school.
Okay. So the board passed that as a policy or as a document?
Yeah, they do it. It's an annual resolution that they pass in order to signal to our families that we will protect school as a safe place. And then out of that, we train our school principals and our office managers and frontline staff about what it would mean if there was any non-local law enforcement that would come into our schools.
Well, Superintendent, you know, there's so many things happening in our society and our culture and our community that somehow you're supposed to overcome. And those of us who are purists, we really just want you to focus on the education, but the job is so much bigger than that. There's no going back into time. And we talk about issues with family dynamics and how many families don't have a father in the home, or they're divorced, or there's abuse, or there's been drug use, or somebody's incarcerated. All of those things are sending kids into the classroom, and we all expect them to be ready to work.
Correct.
Right? And ready
Correct.
To learn, right? And then the income piece, tell us a little bit about the numbers and the expectation of the families that you're serving. Now, a household income for Salem, average is $46,000. And the national, it's 53, but in Salem, it's 46. In Oregon, it's closer to 60. So I think a lot of people who live in Salem and go to work and they have a roof over their heads and they take their kids to soccer practice and kind of a standard life don't think of Salem as being really poverty-stricken. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we hear from the school district that it really is.
Right. So I think right now we would say we have about 60% of our kids that live in poverty. But that number is getting harder and harder to say exactly what it is, because we do have a number of our schools that are called community eligibility schools. We have two full feeder systems, both the North feeder system and the McKay feeder system. Those are 100% free meal sites for us, the elementaries that feed the middle schools, that feed the high school. So that's a big number of our kids. The way we get to a community eligibility school is not through the free and reduced lunch application. It's through a formula, which I couldn't tell you exactly how it all works, but it has to do with the food stamps and housing and foster care. There's a system to take all those numbers and put it into what's considered like a poverty rate for those schools. And if they're over a certain percentage, then you can automatically do a 100% free breakfast and meal. So it doesn't make the numbers pure if you just pull those into a free and reduced lunch. Because at all those sites, we actually don't have free and reduced lunch applications at all.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and that's really changed in about the last 5 to 7 years of how we monitor that, but mainly for the free meals and access to breakfast and lunch.
Wow. All right. So many things to unravel. We want to get to the bond work that's being done. So we're going to take a quick break. We're talking to Superintendent Christy Perry of Salem-Keizer Schools, and she's with us for another segment before we get to Cowboy Ron and Sergeant Mike. So stick with us, folks. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by our friends at Sylvan Learning Center.
And welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart, and as you might have been able to tell, Dave Bourne is back from spending half his work day at the fair.
You know, fair food doesn't have calories, so I am joyed.
Dave rejoins us.
So welcome. Took a ride in the dragster.
Welcome back to Newsmakers. Of course you did.
Of course I did.
All right, Christy Perry is in the studio with us today. So many things to talk about with education. Right now, of course, we passed an enormous bond. This community did over $600 million to do work in the schools, expand capacity, improve the facilities, and so forth. There's a lot of work to be done. Christy, can you tell us? I have so many questions. How much work is being done? How fast? I mean, it's $600 million. It must take you a while to spend $600 million.
So our goal is 5 years.
Okay.
We have started with, we knew that because of the worries about price escalation, the sooner we started, the quicker we started, the better off our pricing would be. And so prior to the bond passing, we even intentionally worked to get some of the plans in place so that the minute the bond passed, we could then really accelerate the work. We wanted to be in the construction season for this summer. So we had, because every year, it's about a 7% escalation in cost.
Wow, 7%.
7% escalation
in
cost. And that might even be low at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew that every year we delayed, it's 7% more cost, and you can do less with the dollars. So
wait till the recession hits. We're in a yield curve inversion, you know.
I know.
Maybe it'll be cheaper in a few years.
It will be cheaper in a few years if there is a recession. But right now, we're not in a recession, and we're actually fighting for contractors. So we have five schools that are under construction that started in, I think it was March at North Salem High School. We started putting in modular classrooms and removing the old modulars so we could have temporary classroom space during construction. So we have North and McNary, our two large high schools that are under construction. Judson and Waldo, we did those at the same time because they're a similar floor plan. So you have some efficiencies with architectural work when you have similar style buildings. And then Gubser was our other school this summer. And Gubser actually is finished. We're doing our ribbon cutting on it tonight. We have four additional classrooms, a brand new cooking space. They actually have a cafeteria for the first time in the history of Gubser Elementary School.
Really?
Yep.
Holy cow.
They took the covered metal roof play area and added, so here's what I love about this because it's really efficient. They just added walls to a metal covered play area, and it is beautiful. That's what was shocking to me. Here's the best part of it. When you go inside and they were polishing the floors when I was in there last week, they still have a do not skateboard sign in there.
Oh,
and
nice.
I thought that was kind of awesome because it kind of, you know, here's what it was for. So in about 10-12 weeks, we completed that entire project. So kudos to our contractor on that project. You know, there'll be some little hiccups as school starts. North and McNary will be a full 18 months under construction. So those schools now have, we've moved everyone out. We moved them back in. We are now going to spend construction while we have students there, which will be unique challenges for those schools. I have to say that our two principals at those locations have just been amazing leaders and making sense for it all. At North Salem High School, what I love about the construction there is that we're really preserving the historic nature of North Salem High School, which I love,
mm-hmm.
and having it really, especially on the backside, look like a modern high school that really transitions well with the architecture of North Salem. So that's going to be a fabulous new school. They're building a new common area, two new gyms, multiple new classrooms, CTE spaces, new science labs at that school.
Are you anticipating being able to do everything that the bond wanted to pay for, given the cost escalations?
Right now we are, because we built cost escalation into our estimates from the beginning. We knew that in the beginning, when we first started our work, it was 5%. Pretty soon it went to 6%. So we built in some cost escalation based on the year that we were planning the project. So we have a 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 4 year plan. And anything we can move to an earlier year, we know saves money for us. The other thing we did that was really good is we got really good premiums when we went out in the market to sell our bonds.
Mm.
And so that has given us a cushion of if there's price escalation, we have some contingency there for that.
Yeah, if the listener doesn't quite get that, if you want to get cash out of your credit card, you might have to pay 24%. You might have to pay 19%. If you've got a great credit rating and a great credit card, maybe you're only paying 9%. It's no different, not much different with the school district. So if you have a great bond rating, it costs you less to go borrow the money.
Yep.
And when it costs you less to go borrow the money, then more of that money goes into the work in the classroom. Mm-hmm.
And we do have a great bond rating, which is why we were able to do what we were able to do.
5 years from now, let's say we accomplished everything, are we going to need another $600 million bond? You don't want to talk about that.
I don't want to talk. No. As long as we're a growing district, we're going to have to keep a really close eye on enrollment. One of the, and that's where we are right now, we're a growing district. It started to slow a little bit. We were growing between 300 and 400 students a year. Last year, it bumped down to maybe 100. So we just have to watch the enrollment trends. One of the things the facilities task force really wrestled with 3 years ago now was whether we should do a new high school. And mm-hmm. the first proposal that the district brought in was we need a seventh comprehensive high school based on the numbers. And the facilities task force really pushed back on us for that. Number one, because a new high school right now is about $250 million.
Ouch.
I was just listening to Portland Public just this week, and just a renovation of one of their high schools, which was major, was like at $150, $60 million for a renovation of one of their high schools.
Wow.
So the cost to build new for a comprehensive high school, let alone finding property, made it so that no other schools would get what they needed. And the facilities committee felt strongly that they wanted all six comprehensive high schools to be state-of-the-art high schools so that we didn't have brand new West Salem high school where North didn't have any, mm-hmm. where McKay didn't have any. You know, there's some real facility challenges at McKay, and the facilities committee felt strongly that they wanted to address the facility challenges across all of our high schools. And in addition, Kaiser really is hopeful to remain a one high school town with McNary.
Ah, I see. Yeah, you don't want to have haves and have nots when
Correct.
It comes to the high school and what they have ability to offer, right?
Correct.
Although people who go to North, they get to go into more historic buildings and have that kind of mm-hmm. vibe to it. So do you think, obviously, they seem like the schedule is going well.
Schedule's going well. I keep being anxious about, is there any big hiccups to start school? But it's going really well. We have fabulous contractors.
That's my question.
Yeah.
Who's doing the work?
LG Pence is doing major work. I don't know the other contractors offhand for Waldo Judson, and so I won't get those right, so I want to be accurate. But LG Pence is really doing fabulous work for us, and they are at both McNary and North, so they have a major amount of work. They're a local contractor. Mm-hmm. They are using many, many local subs in the area. And so, number one, they're amazing at their work, and they're local, which is just an added bonus to us because we know that using local really builds our local economy as well.
And you're subject to, obviously, purchasing and quoting laws. Mm-hmm. You want to touch on that in terms of, you know, if somebody comes in and they're from out of town or out of state, are you still required to use them, or how much can you steer towards local?
Yeah. There, you really can't too much with public contracting laws. We're really fortunate in this case, but you can put a local provision, but local in the public contracting world means in the state. Mm-hmm. So that isn't very local to us sometimes. I think because of the construction market, it has also made it that our local contractors want to work at home and not be working in the Portland area. I would. But our projects are attractive to them, which I think helps. The other thing we really try to work hard is to help our local contractors understand how to access our documents. So we try to be sure that they know how to work with us.
No, that's terrific. In the studio with us, Christy Perry, Superintendent of Public Schools, Salem Kaiser Schools. We're going to have to take a break and send her on her way so she can go focus on the kids and the teachers a little bit more. I just want to say I admire that you even tackle the work that you do.
Thank you.
There are so many dynamics of your job. You're dealing with politically elected policy people, which can change at the moment of an election. You're dealing with parents who are really neglectful. You're dealing with parents that are really invested. and they want the same outcome. And teachers and unions and facilities and politics and economics in an ever-changing environment. Wow. It's exhausting just to look at you and realize the job you're doing. So I'm glad you're up for the challenge.
Yeah, I am. I love my work. I love this community. And that takes you a long way.
Well, I appreciate you being here. I appreciate the job you're doing. And we're going to look forward to having you back. There's so many things about the education in our community that's so important to people. We're going to have you on Newsmakers and tackle those topics.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, folks, stick with us. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. We're going to come back with Cowboy Ron and Sergeant Mike for a few minutes of what the guys have to think about that. 1430 KYKN, Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape. And welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart for Dave Bourne. And we have in our studio once a week, we like to talk to Sergeant Mike. Mike brings in his friend Cowboy Ron, and we get a different perspective than you might hear the rest of the week. So welcome back to the studio, guys.
Thank you, Brent.
Glad to have you here. You guys always, I have a feeling that you guys sit around somewhere. You know, I picture you guys sitting by a fire or in front of a beer or something and talking about the way the world is. And things you like about it and things you don't, right? What's in your mind this week?
Agriculture.
Yeah, and the great, Sarge, take over.
And the great contribution that we make right here in Marion and Polk counties. And the bounty that we receive out of this area. And we're the garden of the state, in fact. So one of the things we were talking about was agriculture, just crops alone, bring in $800 million right here in Salem or right here in Marion County. That's no wages. That's no equipment. That's no anything. And I just want to salute agriculture. This next year, we as a station are getting more and more involved with some agriculture, promoting agriculture throughout the year. And just setting it up high where it should be and going through those things. And we were talking, he'd got a prune tree.
Petite prune, thorn, petite prune tree.
And he went and got it, you know, picked a bunch yesterday. And let me ask you, how many years have you been picking prunes off that tree?
64.
Holy cow.
I started when I was 9 years old. And I'm not going to tell everybody right where it's at.
No.
It's full of prunes right now. It's in the Kubler Route 4 area next to the Clark Farm, the old Clark Farm, and the old George Gravenhorst property. The county mows it a little bit, but I get a taller step ladder and harvest it. The best prune, the sweetest prune you've ever eaten in your life.
Oh, man.
Well, that's the thing with agriculture. You put in an investment, it can pay off for your generation, the next generation, and so forth, right?
Well, the beautiful thing now when you're traveling, and we're all traveling this time of year, Highway 22, Silverton Highway, Silverton Road, it's absolutely a bustling industry that's just busting.
Yeah.
You go to the different fruit farms, produce farms, the Zelenskys, go there and see the service and the freshness that you're getting. And these fresh products are coming off of the Willamette Valley trees and orchards.
Yeah. You know, Cafe 22 on east of town and Jones Farm Produce north of town and Zelensky east of town.
Easy Orchards.
Yeah. Yes, yeah.
I mean,
Steve and his family, yes.
Go out Highway 22 and there's more there. And it's good stuff, too. I mean, this stuff that was picked 2 hours ago.
Well, they have a payroll, too. They're paying these young students, school people, college people, and spurring the commerce.
That is a lot of commerce. And Sergeant Mike, you're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars, what, $600 or $800 million. Hey, folks, you got to realize this. When that when that produce leaves Oregon, say, if it goes, if we ship wheat to the Pacific Rim or grass seed to Augusta, wherever it is, that's money that comes into the area. And that enriches the whole area, which is kind of the definition of economic development. Mm-hmm. It's enriching the whole area where more money is coming into our valley than is going out because of this agricultural segment.
Yeah, and you got to get the blend of rural and urban. This works two ways.
Oh, would you tell the governor that, please, Cowboy Ron?
Yeah. Well, would you pass that on? I think it's been said a few times, but urban kind of looks at the rural like there's those funny old cowboys or ducks. This is the heart of Oregon.
Yeah, it is.
Amen. It's so true. And I mean, I'm still reeling about the governor's quote about the days in which rural Oregon was, you know, a major part of our economy are over and we need to move on.
Yeah, I caught that one, but I'm supposed to be nice today.
Yeah, we're being, that's it.
You're just telling how it is. We have you here to tell how it is.
Okay, so I get to tell how it is.
Yeah.
Let's cut some trees. Let's go.
Hey, let me tell you something. In looking for this, I made a discovery that I didn't know, that Oregon is the number one producer in the U.S. of cranberries. I thought they were Washington State and New England, and, you know, those bogs, but it's down in southwest Oregon.
Yeah, Brookings, North Bend, Coos Bay. Yeah.
They must have hundreds of acres of bogs.
Well, it's a pretty good tourist attraction, too, to go see it.
Really?
Yeah.
Right, let's go down there.
Just like Easy Orchard.
And of course, we're doing the vast majority of hazelnuts in the world, right?
But there's a ton of them going in.
I'll tell you, we did, over the last few weeks, Chris and I, and surveying the agriculture in the area, we saw more hazelnut, baby hazelnut nurseries starting everywhere you looked. So we got with the John Deere people at Pape and ask them, what's going on? There's a shortage of hazelnuts in the world, and the number one other producer is Turkey, and they're having some real economic ups and downs. And
yeah, we're gonna fill them up in the next, you know, half a dozen to 10 years.
Well, we're gonna have to find new buyers because Trump's we were just talking about this on Newsmakers earlier in the week, that Trump's they're being taxed, or China is now, has taxing our hazelnuts. Mm-hmm. And we could send 70% of our hazelnuts to China now.
Sure.
That's
crazy. So we'll find plenty of places throughout the world that want to eat hazelnuts, right?
Okay. Hazelnuts taste good.
So just, Brent, make sure we keep the commerce of Oregon going.
All right. And that includes agriculture.
You bet.
And I'd like to see it east of the mountains as well, not just in the valley.
The boys are incredible.
What is KYKN doing, Sergeant Mike, in terms of, you say you want to focus on and salute them moving forward?
Yeah. We've aligned ourselves just recently, come to an agreement with Capital Press and Joe Beach. He's the CEO over there. And we're going to be doing some things with them in the upcoming year, like the Northwest Ag Fest, which will be held here. We're going to be involved. In fact, we're going to have you guys out there for one day at least.
All right. We'll look forward to that. We're going to have to call it a day. We'll be back to Friday. We'll talk about some of these things that the superintendent was talking about today. Thanks for joining us for Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, Sergeant Mike, and Cowboy Ron. Thanks for your thoughts. Come visit us tomorrow on 1430 KYKN.
This has been Lynn Fenton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.